The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you interested in the cutting edge of investing? That means frontier and emerging markets. And would you like to get started? Or perhaps you are already investing but still have questions? Welcome to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. On today's program, we'll take a look at news, trends, and background information that you should know to become an informed investor in new and emerging opportunities. Now, here is your host, Gavin Graham.
Hello, and welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham, and I'm here on Voice America each Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific, and 2 p.m. in the UK. Each week, I talk to fund managers, analysts, and journalists about issues and potential investments in these markets and recent developments and what effect they might have on those investments. We're trying to cut through the confusion about some of these markets where there's a lot of, how shall one put it, noise, and look at what works in them right now and what I believe will work in them in the future. In emerging markets, we mean obviously the BRIC countries. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. In fact, my second guest and I have perhaps somewhat different views about investing in China. In the emerging category, we also include Egypt, Turkey, Chile, Mexico, and the Czech Republic. By frontier markets, we mean countries like Colombia, Vietnam, Nigeria, Kenya, Bangladesh, Kazakhstan, Ghana, Panama, Slovenia, and Botswana. Today, we'll have a report from Nigeria on a new bank that's planned by the BRIC countries to try to replace the, or not replace necessarily, perhaps complement would be a better way of putting it, the IMF and the World Bank in terms of provision of finance to frontier and emerging markets. I'll also be talking to a Wall Street veteran about the two main different types of investment management, that's active and passive, and why we believe that one is preferable in emerging and frontier markets to the other. And then we're going to be finishing up with a non-financial barrier. We're talking to a professor from Montreal about the way that home bias can often get in the way of successful investing in these markets, because the lack of familiarity means that bad news is somewhat exaggerated, shall we say. So what we'll do now is take a break, and we'll be moving on to the next item in the program shortly. Thanks very much. Please stick with us.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This program is produced by EFMI Media, which has become the leader in information about emerging and frontier markets investing. EFMI recently compiled the book entitled Investing in Frontier Markets: Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, set for release by John Wiley & Sons later this year, and another book, also on frontier markets, which will be on store bookshelves later in the year. We are also launching a newsletter called EFMI. For more information, email info@emergingfrontier.ca. For more news about upcoming program segments, the books we have written, or the EFMI newsletter, please email info@emergingfrontier.ca. You can call 416-944-1750.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the book that we mention sometimes on this show, Investing in Frontier Markets, co-authored by Al Emmett and myself. It's going to be coming out next month, published by Wiley. And in it, we look at the role that frontier markets can play in your investment portfolio. Frontier markets are interesting because they are the next generation of emerging markets, as we've discussed often on this program. But perhaps one of the great attractions of them to you as an investor is that they are not correlated with either the developed markets, but interestingly, even with emerging markets. By not correlated, we mean that essentially they zig when the other stuff zags. So that by putting a little bit of these markets, which are themselves quite volatile, as we've been discussing in detail over the weeks this program has been on, but because they actually do not react and move in the same direction as the major markets, then we will actually, by adding them to your portfolio, you will reduce the overall volatility of your portfolio. Frontier markets had a correlation of 0.3 with developed markets for the last decade. During the financial crisis, like everything else, they obviously fell a lot. In fact, they fell over 50%. Like a lot of the developed markets, in fact. But while that pushed the correlation up, it was still only 0.6. And subsequently, it's fallen back to 0.3. By comparison, emerging markets, which used to have a correlation somewhat similar in that they were sort of 0.6, 0.7 correlation with developed markets, actually now are 0.9. correlated with developed markets. What that means is, in essence, for every 1% that the developed markets moves, then you will see a 0.9% move in the emerging markets. So emerging markets are not really a great diversifier in the way that they used to be 10 to 15 years ago. And our view is that frontier markets, and the research shows that frontier markets are now the great way to actually get some non-correlation into your portfolio, so that although they're volatile themselves, they actually reduce the overall volatility of your portfolio because they actually do not move in the same direction as the developed markets. So in effect, what we're saying is everybody should have a small percentage of their international portfolio, maybe 5 to 10% of your international equity portfolio in frontier markets. I will take a break here. And when we come back, we'll have Peter with us to talk about the demographics of Mexico. Thanks very much.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This program comes to you from the EFMI Media Company. EFMI Media is one of the most comprehensive sources of information and analysis on emerging and frontier markets. EFMI Media has become a leader in knowledge, expertise, and analysis of emerging and frontier markets, both in opportunities to investigate and pitfalls to avoid. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca or call 416-944-1750. EFMI Media produces this program, researched and wrote Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, which is set for release later this year, and is currently working on a second book, also on frontier markets. EFMI also publishes a newsletter called EFMI Information and provides knowledgeable speakers on these and other topics. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca, write to info@emergingfrontier.ca, or call 416-944-1750.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham, and I'm delighted to say that we actually do have financial advisor and demographics researcher Peter Merrick on the line. Welcome back to the program, Peter.
Thank you very much, Gavin.
As I mentioned, we'll be looking at the demographics of Mexico in this segment. But before we go to Mexico, you've mentioned in the previous pieces we've done that demographics are destiny. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is we look at a population. If we have a population that is the majority of individuals are educated and of working age, and they have a rule of law, and they're situated for growth, and we've seen this in a number of countries. Looking at a lot of the Asian countries have grown substantially over the last 50 years because they've made an investment in their people, and their birth rates compared to the working age individuals has changed, and we've seen benefits in their economies.
So looking at Mexico, I imagine it probably would be one of the stars of this process in terms of the demographics there.
Yes, something very interesting has happened because the demographics in Mexico right now are a little below replacement. It's for society to sustain itself, the total fertility rate for women, how many children they have during their entire lifetime, should be approximately 2.1 per woman. Mexico over the last 2 years has actually dropped to 2 children per woman. So this has had a drastic change and will have a drastic change on the demographics. In the past, Mexico had birth rates of 5 or 6 children per woman during their lifetime. And the population grew quite substantially over 100 years. It went from 15 million at the 100 years ago to 115 million today.
So one of the factors, obviously, that people are very aware of in North America is migration from Mexico into the United States. But with the recession and the financial crisis in 2008-09, we've actually been seeing reverse migration. How is this having an effect on Mexican demographics, presumably to its benefit, because you're getting some fairly skilled workers coming back into the workforce?
Well, it's having several benefits. For one, Mexico is competing with the United States for farmers, for people to work in agriculture. And what Mexico is seeing right now is a lot of people are returning from the United States and they're starting to work in the agriculture sector, and that's actually beneficial because it was hurting as people were migrating up to the United States. In addition to that, because of NAFTA, you've seen a lot of industry has located on the borders, such as car manufacturing has located. And Mexico is a country with the rule of law. They're part of NAFTA. There's a trade treaty between Mexico, the United States, and Canada, and it's been around for 20 years. And Mexico is starting to really benefit from it. In addition to that, they're also, their population is getting older. Before, it was very difficult. I'm getting back to demographics. If a lot of people were not able to enter the workforce, a lot of women who are having a lot of children. In addition to that, there were a lot of young people. What we're going to see, especially in the next 10 to 20 years, is there's going to be a huge amount of people who are going to be working age, and they're going to be able to contribute. And this is going to be very helpful, especially for the United States, which is north, because the United States is an aging population, while the demographics and the average age in Mexico is about 10 years to 15 years younger than the United States.
Right,
so they have,
as you said,
a lot more productivity in them.
That's true, and as you say, when you do get that slowdown in the birth rate, you actually do get that big jump because you have a lot more people entering the working age population, while at the same time you don't have as many young people. And obviously the elderly portion of the population in Mexico is a much smaller percentage than it would be in a more developed economy such as the U.S.
And on top of that, we're finding that a number of years ago, we saw a lot of manufacturing going, leaving the continent, leaving North America. And what we're starting to see now is we're seeing a lot of manufacturing is coming home, is coming to North America. And Mexico offers a labor force where the cost of manufacturing, the cost of services are a lot cheaper. And this has to do with transportation costs, and we also have lower labor costs in Mexico, and it's right next door to the United States, which is the largest economy in the world.
Absolutely. So which sectors do you think within the Mexican economy are likely to be benefiting from these trends? Presumably some of the consumer goods as more people enter the working age population and have more disposable income.
Well, we're seeing telecom is having a huge boost. We're seeing a lot of consumer goods. The Mexican economy is starting to become a consumer society. A lot of services are moving down to Mexico. Even though that Spanish is the first language, we're going to see call centers. We're going to see a lot of services are going to be able to move down to Mexico. What we're also seeing happen in Mexico, and this is a smaller sector, is a lot of Americans are choosing to retire down in Mexico. So we're going to see building. We're seeing American dollar can go a lot further. So we're going to see a lot of building, retirement homes. We're also going to see medical tourism, which is going to happen.
Yep.
Because the cost in the United States is so expensive. These things are already starting to happen. You're seeing a lot of medical clinics on the border of, let's say, California and let's say Tijuana on the Mexican border. You're starting to see a lot of manufacturing on the border of Texas and Mexico. So this is starting to happen, and we're we're starting to see that their economy has actually done better than the United States over the last few years, as in growth.
So how would Mexico compare with other countries in the region? Not necessarily the other major developed economies like the US, which we've been talking about, but maybe some of the other major emerging markets like, say, Brazil, which always tends to be picked on as the principal Latin American market people look at. Would Mexico compare quite favorably with that?
Well, it's the second largest Latin American country. It's the largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. In addition to that, a lot of people have to look at Mexico because in the West, we look at Mexico has a lot of immigration from Mexico to the United States where people are leaving. What is ignored in the developed markets is how many people actually immigrate to Mexico. Mexico is right. The main place where people in Central and South America, Spanish-speaking countries, immigrate to, because even though the average wage and the average earning in Mexico is a lot less than the neighbor to the north, it's a lot better than most of the Central and South American countries. So you're seeing a lot of immigration from Argentina, from Central America, and that's been going on for a number of years.
Now, that's an interesting point.
In the region, Gavin, many, many immigrants or potential immigrants look at Mexico as their first choice.
No, that's a very valid point, I think, Peter. As you say, everybody thinks about, Mexican immigration to the U.S., but in fact, that Central American migration into Mexico, because as you say, its income levels are substantially higher than most of Central America or the Caribbean, is obviously a major driver for growth within Mexico. So I would presume then that all of this would make you fairly confident about the outlook for Mexico, even though, as you pointed out at the beginning of this interview, the replacement rate or the birth rate in Mexico has dropped marginally below replacement rate. But at the moment, they're in the sweet spot. Would it be fair to say?
They are in a sweet spot because even though it's dropped below replacement only in the last year or two, Gavin, it usually takes, it takes about 30, 40 years for it to really show up. That there's a shortage of people. What's going to happen in the next 15 to 20 years is you're going to have the majority of people in Mexico who are going to be of working age, who are going to be in their most productive years. And that's going to be a real benefit. And in addition to that, Mexico has a very small population over the age of 65. And they're not going to be impacted by the same things as, let's say, many of the Western developed nations that have populations that the average age is going to be 47, 50 years old, where Mexico is going to have a very productive population. Their cost for medical care is going to be lower because as people get older, it's taxing on the system. So Mexico has a very good outlook. When we look at demographics, one thing about demographics is it's not something that happens in 1 year. We're able to make predictions over 20, 30, 40, 50, a lifetime of what's going to happen because people at different ages usually do different things. And we're able to plot that around and we're able to look at how many people in a certain age bracket. And we're able to look at what do people at that stage of life usually do. And Mexico is very well positioned. If they invest in their education, rule of law, they're going to do really well because they have a very young, productive population. And they happen to be next door to the world's largest economy, and they're very seated to do very well with exports and also developing their internal economy, their consumer economy. And that's what every nation wants to do when they first enter into doing exports. They want to develop their internal economy so they can carry themselves and they can actually increase the benefits for their people and also for the people who invest. And just one last thing I want to share with you, Gavin. NAFTA's been in place for 20 years, and the great thing about that and the reason why it was put in place and why Mexico wanted it is they wanted to secure foreign investment, so they're open to investment.
No, I think that's a very, very important point, Peter, because it is a major factor in terms of the willingness of the ruling elite within an emerging or frontier economy to be willing to open to outside influences and to sign trade deals like NAFTA and to allow the growth of foreign trade and foreign influences. It means letting go of some of the control, but it certainly raises the overall wealth level of the country and the population. So thank you very much indeed again for coming back to us and talking about Mexico, which is a market, as you say, that often people only think of in terms of its relationship to the US, but obviously has those other factors as well, which are contributing to a good outlook for it.
Thank you very much, Gavin.
Appreciate it. And our thanks to financial advisor and demographic researcher Peter Merrick for that look at demographics, destiny, and investment potential. When we come back from the break, we'll be, depending on what the phone connections are like, either going in the direction of which is the appropriate management style that's most suited to investing in emerging and frontier markets, and then probably a visit to Africa. We'll see which way the telephone connections play out, and be back with you in after the break. Thanks very much indeed.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you like what you hear about investing in emerging and frontier markets on this program? Would you like to learn more to increase your investing effectiveness? EFMI Media also publishes a subscription-based newsletter called EFMI. We'd like to tell you more about it. Drop us an email at info@emergingfrontier.ca. We've designed EFMI as a newsletter to provide expert and up-to-date news and analysis of opportunities in the same markets that we discuss here on Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. EFMI has information and analysis that you won't find anywhere else, and you can start receiving it by emailing info@emergingfrontier.ca.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Save on your prescriptions with the RX Savings Plus drug discount card offered by Voice America. It is not insurance, and discounts are only available from participating pharmacies. But 9 out of 10 pharmacies participate nationwide. Start saving today. Print your free card online at voiceamerica.rxsavingsplus.com or text the word TALK RADIO to 96362.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. This is Gavin Graham, and I have Paul DeSisto on the line from New York. He's Director and Senior Portfolio Manager at M&R Capital Management. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing, Paul.
And thank you very much, Gavin, for inviting me.
We talked last week about a very important aspect of investing and didn't really have time to cover it completely, so thanks for coming back today. Essentially, we are talking about the difference between active management, that is where a fund manager is actually making decisions in terms of which stocks to buy or not to buy, and passive management, which is in essence indexing, where you buy all the stocks that are included within an index or at least sufficient to effectively replicate the performance. Would you say that with passive management, the fund company manager has no real decisions to make once the index has been selected?
Well, the decision making is certainly minimal. All he or she has to do is make sure that the portfolio continues to reflect the index, adjusting the holdings to reflect changes in the constituent holdings in the index itself. A recent example was MSCI. They relegated Argentina from emerging markets to frontier markets index to reflect that country's deteriorating political, economic, and financial conditions that subsequently required a change in the actual index and therefore any funds that were trying to track that index.
So once you've chosen the index and you've set it and forget it, to use a wonderful phrase from the world of TV advertising, in essence, you're then just going to get the performance of the index minus whatever the fees that are charged. And of course, one of the arguments in favor of passive investing is that the cost of doing so is much lower. Is that correct?
The cost is indeed very much lower. I've always maintained it's better to pay the management fee and get the safety that an active manager can provide you. But just to reflect back on the fees and what they can be, looking at the largest of the frontier market, for example, which is the Templeton markets, for frontier markets, they have an expense ratio of 2.12%. That included the management fee and returned 21.4% over the past year. The second largest of these is the Harding Levener Frontier Emerging Markets Fund, returned 28%, had a total expense ratio of 4.71, which includes a management fee of 2.25%. The Morgan Stanley Frontier Markets Fund had an expense ratio of 3.56, a management fee of 2.1, and in the 11 months that has been in place, returned 27%. Now, that being said, look at some of the ETFs like the Guggenheim Frontier Market. It has a 70 basis point expense ratio. It uses the Bank of New York Mellon New Frontier Index. It returned a negative 13.5% over the past 52 weeks. The Market Vectors Africa ETF only has an 80 basis point management fee. But the one-year return was a positive 1.55%. So certainly just looking at those numbers, you can see that the lower fees did not really help you, and the lack of performance relative to the managed funds was overwhelmed by the extra fee that you would have paid with the active management.
And so therefore, in essence, would it be fair to say that in developing markets, so particularly frontier markets, but also emerging markets as well, because they are not as liquid and as efficient or transparent as the developed markets, generally active fund managers are able to add sufficient value to more than make up for the higher fees that they charge?
Very certainly. Just looking at the performance figures I just cited, just as a prime example of that. But this is simply logical. If a country is in an index that is in an index is going through political turmoil, the active manager can exit that country. The indexer cannot, while still be true to the index. Another problem with the ETFs, and this reflects on goes back to what you just said, is that frontier markets are by definition smaller and less liquid than the more advanced emerging markets. If you invest in frontier markets via an ETF or a closed-end fund for that matter, that shares this illiquidity. That fund will share the illiquidity, and you may be forced to sell at a lower price due to lack of demand for the shares.
Now, that liquidity argument is a very important one, I think. So if, as you say, the actively managed manager has room to move around, move the weightings within the fund, depending on what's happening, in essence, the reason you're paying that management fee, particularly in fairly volatile developing markets, is that flexibility, that ability to actually be completely out of a country or indeed a region where the fundamentals don't look great.
That's exactly right, and that's just another reason why you really are better off paying the management fee anytime you do that type of investing in any market that's illiquid or strange or has lack of information and transparency.
I mean, a number of these actively managed funds, Templeton come to mind, have analysts on the ground in a number of these countries. Is it fair to say that that gives them a very big advantage in terms of the ability to see some of these negative developments happening perhaps more rapidly?
Well, I certainly agree with that. I mean, Franklin Templeton, to use the example you just cited, they're constantly using on their advertising on television that they have analysts on scene in these countries. Last 2 weeks ago in Barron's, the Harding Levener Fund portfolio manager was quoted talking about his having coffee at a cafe in Lagos, Nigeria. just using a screen or just using an index to come up with stocks in these countries, it just isn't going to be sufficient to avoid the pitfalls that can occur when there's a serious problem. And similarly, there are going to be some great opportunities, some individual companies in these countries, and I don't think you're going to see it if you don't have an analyst there on the ground.
So just to summarize then, Paul, while obviously I think we're both in favor of active management in emerging and frontier markets, are there any circumstances where you might recommend to clients that they should be looking at a passively managed investment?
I think you can look at a passively managed investment for something that is very, very liquid. A lot of folks are using the SPY, the S&P 500. A lot of folks are using the Russell 2000, and there are three Russell 2000s, core, value, and growth. A market like that, you can sort of get away with, because we do see in this country, generally speaking, when the market goes up, a rising tide lifts all the boats in the market. And you can, in fact, outperform for a short period of time. Of course, you have the issue with tax ramifications and so forth, and tax-efficient investing. But with an ETF, they generally tend to be somewhat tax-efficient anyway, and if it's in a tax-advantaged fund, it's really not an issue. But there are other types of funds where, again, one should be in a managed fund. Another example is municipal and high-yield corporate bonds. Again, there are too many pitfalls that can be encountered with a fund, and I think it's much better to have active management in those markets, which are a little bit less liquid and do require a little bit more research as to the ability of the issuer of the bond, whether it's corporate high yield or whether it's municipal, to pay off. And we saw that with Detroit just 3 weeks ago.
Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed, Paul, for explaining the difference between active and passive management and why I think we both agree that active management in emerging and frontier markets is the way to go. Hope to be talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Graham. Much obliged.
Thanks very much indeed, Paul. And we'll go to break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you like what you hear about investing in emerging and frontier markets on this program? Would you like to learn more to increase your investing effectiveness? EFMI Media also publishes a subscription-based newsletter called EFMI. We'd like to tell you more about it. Drop us an email at info@emergingfrontier.ca. We've designed EFMI as a newsletter to provide expert and up-to-date news and analysis of opportunities in the same markets that we discuss here on Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. EFMI has information and analysis that you won't find anywhere else, and you can start receiving it by emailing info@emergingfrontier.ca.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Boxing, like networking, is a contact sport. The more contacts and connections you make, the greater your success. If you're a business owner, sales agent, or job seeker, it's all about the connection. If you want help in your corner, pick up a copy of Knockout Networking today by speaker and author Michael Goldberg. Michael's book will absolutely help you generate more prospects, more referrals, and more business, or more job leads, or even more social connections. Knockout Networking will help you feel more confident speaking with people you don't know. Determine who your target market is, the best way to introduce yourself at business meetings, how to deliver an elevator pitch, follow-up, and how to generate more leads. Social media isn't always the answer, but Knockout Networking is. Visit knockoutnetworking.com to pick up your copy of Michael Goldberg's book, Knockout Networking. Remember, nothing happens in business without a connection, so make the right connections. Visit knockoutnetworking.com today.
Save on your prescriptions with the RX Savings Plus Drug Discount Card, offered by Voice America. It is not insurance, and discounts are only available from participating pharmacies. But 9 out of 10 pharmacies participate nationwide. Start saving today. Print your free card online at voiceamerica.rxsavingsplus.com or text the word TALK RADIO to 96362.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm delighted to say that we have our next guest who is going to be talking about a slightly different aspect of investing in emerging and frontier markets. Normally, as you know, I talk to fund managers, analysts, and journalists about what's been happening there. But even considering the insights we get from these individuals, you as the investor have to make some decisions, preferably during discussions with a good financial advisor. Outside of all the political risks and economic changes, some investors have not yet become comfortable with investing their hard-earned dollars in countries and economies that are thousands of miles and in different cultures. These investors may have what's called a home bias, which prevents them from getting comfortable with these markets. To look at this and how to deal with it, I have psychologist and university professor Ron Thiessen on the line from Montreal, Canada. He often speaks to financial audiences about investor dynamics, and he sees an investor's home bias as an understandable one that can be dealt with. Welcome to the program, Ron.
Thank you very much for having me.
Not at all, a pleasure. In order to understand home bias clearly, let's start from the beginning. We have actually mentioned it in the book that we've written, but would bias be a fair word? That has fairly harsh connotations.
Well, you know, in the movie Titanic, there's a line that depicts an attitude that some investors sometimes adopt about home bias, and I just thought, when I was looking at it, I thought, that really summarizes what we think sometimes. You know, when Jack is boarding the ship at the last minute, the purser asks him if he's been through the health inspection queue, and his response is, of course. Anyway, we don't have any lice. We're Americans. And, you know, that sometimes that's the attitude that investors have about their home bias or their home-based market, that, you know, it's got to be good because we live in this country. That goes for anybody in any country. And the home bias has been very well documented and proven in any country that any investor comes from. They prefer to invest in their home country. And, you know, there's the kind of the thinking, the assumption, I think, that investors make that the home country doesn't have the corruption problems or questionable management that emerging or frontier markets have, or that the government is going to protect them from misuse or abuse of the system, and so they feel more comfortable investing in areas where they live and work. At the beginning of this program, you talked about noise. You said there's a lot of noise around frontier and emerging markets, and one of the things that I teach a lot about in my seminars across the country is about communication, and the filters through which we receive communication affect the way we interpret the communication. So that goes for sure for the home bias, because the filter that I have that my country is safe and other countries are not affects the kinds of investment decisions I make, and sometimes those are not the best investment decisions.
So effectively then, home bias would be familiarity bias. It's essentially the things that you know are the things you're comfortable with. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, investors, the bias is caused by investors thinking that they're better decision makers than they actually are, and so then they seek information that confirms that belief. We're all aware that when we're paying attention to information, we pay attention to information that confirms the things we believe, and we tend to disregard information that disconfirms what we believe. And that's the very same thing for investors. That's just a kind of a human trait. And you know, in my experience, what I found is that people that are more open to emerging and frontier market investing are the kind of people who have traveled internationally, so they don't just think of their own country in terms of, you know, the first time I went over to Africa, I realized that as a North American, I thought the whole world lived like we do, but actually in North America, we're the only ones in the world that live like we do. Even in Europe, they don't live like we do. So the kind of bias that we have about where we come from and where we live and what we're comfortable with definitely affects, when it comes to investing, what we're comfortable doing. So if you're an international traveler, in fact, there's statistics to prove that international travelers have a greater propensity to invest in other markets, probably because they've been on the ground and they've seen how there's intelligent people there, they understand what they're doing, they're running good businesses, they're well-regulated or well-modulated, so all of those things impact the thinking of that investor if they're a traveler.
And as you say, that willingness to actually make visits to foreign countries on a personal basis is probably the beginning of that. What about the status quo bias? Because I would presume that means that you, tendency to stick with what you got and unwillingness to actually move away from it, quite apart from that sort of home bias we've been talking about.
Yeah, the status quo is that really has to do with the propensity that we have as human beings to resist change. Change management, that's been a huge topic in certainly in my work in the last 2 years across the country. It's been people want to understand change, how to prepare for change, how to deal with resistance to change. And status quo is exactly that. It's the urge to not change anything, which means that you're resisting the pressure to make a change. People have a tendency to just want to hold on to the investments that they have, and if they hear that something is happening, something is, it's not a best investment to have, or that they should be changing their portfolio, they're in general resistant to that idea. I just want to hold on to what I have. I'll hold on in the hope that it's going to come back, or I would rather just hold on and stay and sit where I am than try to make a change that's going to maybe benefit me in the long run.
So to finish up, Ron, and essentially this is the point of this segment, could you give our listeners and myself maybe three ways of dealing with this home bias, status quo bias? It doesn't have to be chapter and verse, but just a few quick points as to what we should do.
Sure. I think the first important thing is to recognize that when you're trying to make a decision about making an investment in a different area, that there will be automatic resistance that will rise up in you saying, I just want to stay where I am. I want to stay where I think it's safe. The other thing is to look at, there is an illusion of knowledge that people have when they're looking at investments in their home country. They think that they understand more about the investment than they probably actually do. And along with that illusion of knowledge comes an illusion of control. They think that because they understand a little bit about it, or they think they understand a little bit about it, they think that they have some control over what's going to happen. And that's actually not true. So if you recognize that, first of all, you're going to resist the change, and then think about how much knowledge do you actually have about the investment that you want to make. And that's where you would, like Paul earlier was talking about, the advantage of having somebody who understands the market and maybe who's on the ground there, that they can give you true, real information. And you got to look at the facts of what your home bias is actually costing you in terms of your investment portfolio, because you may find that emerging markets produce far better returns in the long run. You had mentioned earlier about how it kind of balances your portfolio because there's an inverse ratio. Those are really important things, I think, to look at, and so that you actually have all the facts on the table rather than just looking for the information that confirms your own bias.
Ron, that's wonderful news. And talking of people on the ground, we do have our Nigerian correspondent Samuel Okoja on the line. So I'll say thank you very much, and I hope we can return to talk more about this because it's a fascinating subject.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks. Samuel, welcome to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
Samuel from Lagos.
Thank you so much for joining us. We wanted to talk briefly about this new development bank that the BRIC countries want to put together. How did it get started?
Yes, well, the development bank came as a result of an announcement at a conference in Durban in March. They see it as a counterpart to the, they see it as a counterpoint to the IMF and the World Bank, which they suggest is dominated by the wealthy nations of the West and Asia. So obviously the development bank from the BRICS is set to break the monopoly of IMF and the World Bank.
And some of the reports we've read suggest this new bank will have a strong focus on Africa. Do we have any idea how much money they will have and how much of it may go to Africa?
Well, these countries, talking about the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, South Africa and India, have about $4.4 trillion in foreign reserves. So they could finance the bank out of that. They have said they will use part of it for development project in Africa. How much of that is what we don't know yet.
I presume that setting up a whole new international bank is not a simple matter. Do you see any problems on the horizon?
Well, interestingly, you need to look at the ideologies of some of these countries involved. For example, Russia's support for Syria could be called into question by some African countries and, of course, other members of the BRICS. So this could create tension that I believe members of the Union will have to contend with and probably manage. Of course, there are possible problems over the division of the available dollars between all of the African countries who will want more. Of course, these are challenges that one would naturally expect. Obviously, not all requests will be satisfied.
No, indeed. So finishing up, Samuel, assuming that some of the funds do flow within Africa and they can agree which countries get it, what sectors look to benefit most from this potential new development bank?
Yes, the sectors I believe will get a large chunk of the funding will be the construction sector and others connected to infrastructure construction. There is a huge infrastructure deficit in Africa right now, and so naturally these funds will help close this infrastructure deficit in Africa. And the World Bank has put the infrastructure deficit in Africa at, I don't know the exact amount now, but it's actually in billions. So obviously, this will be the sector that the funds will go into. I also see a situation where the agricultural sector will receive a boost as a result of the funding. Brazil, for example, has done well in agriculture and will be willing to share their experience with African countries so that agriculture could become a major foreign exchange earner for the continent.
Thanks very much indeed, Samuel. I'm delighted we were able to get hold of you to get your insights on that new development bank from the BRIC countries. Please join me again next week. I'll be talking to John Derrick at US Global Investors about some less well-known frontier markets. We'll be back talking to Richard Hula for his long-range look at the connection between the next American election and investments in Mexico, and we're working on an update about Brazil. I'm Gavin Graham. Our producer is Al Emmett. We are the co-authors of Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk and Role in an Investment Portfolio, which is scheduled for release by John Wiley & Sons in late summer of this year, and Frontier Investing for Dummies, which is set for release at the end of the year. We also publish the EFMI newsletter. For more information, please write to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Again, that's info@emergingfrontier.ca. Thanks, and please join us next week.
Thanks for listening today to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with host Gavin Graham. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for another edition. Have a profitable week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.